We had only been dating a month and a half when I got diagnosed.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Welcome to Far Betterment, the podcast where we learn new things about old friends and old things about new friends. In this episode, I'm joined by Crystal. Crystal is a cancer survivor, a former teacher, and a current nurse. She actually changed careers after her diagnosis in order to help people who are going through some of the same things she's gone through. Crystal's very young, and in her young life, she's been through a lot. So without further ado, here's Crystal for Far Betterment. Is this Crystal?
This is.
Hi, Crystal. This is Andrew from Far Betterment.
Hey.
How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm glad to be talking to you. How's your day been going so far?
It's good. Today's just been a relaxing day before I have a oncology nursing meeting that I have to go to later on tonight. But other than that, I've just been hanging out at the house.
Well, speaking of meetings and nursing and oncology and all that stuff, you've got a pretty interesting story to tell. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that and tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm from Georgia. Whenever I graduated high school, I went to school to become a teacher because I just wanted to help kids and I loved kids. And I started teaching. And then my first year of teaching, when I was 23, I got diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a type of cancer that's in the lymph nodes. Mine was actually somehow had morphed next to my heart. So it was like in my chest cavity and all of that. And it was pretty big, about 13 centimeters, and it was stage 2 when they found it. So I immediately had to start chemo, did chemo for 6 months, and I was very fortunate in the fact of that my cancer was in remission, and I didn't have to do radiation. And after the chemo, I went back to teaching for a year, and I loved it, but I just felt like something was missing and that I had cancer for a reason. So I talked to my husband and my family and all that. And so I decided to go to nursing school to become an oncology nurse to help other cancer patients. And recently I started a job on an oncology floor. So we do surgical oncology, and they'll pay for my chemo certification. So that's what I'm working on now.
Wow. Good for you. Congratulations on being in remission and surviving and fighting so hard, really. And, yeah, that's amazing.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how personal you want to get, but how did you handle that news? What was that like? That's a really young age to find out, you know, you have such a serious, that's a serious thing to happen to you, period.
Yeah. So, it was on a Friday night when I found out that I had a mass. We didn't know it was cancerous or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I had the biopsy on a Monday, and I actually didn't find out that it was cancer until the following Thursday.
Oh, wow.
So there was almost a week gap before I actually found out that it was cancer. And whenever the doctors actually came in and told me that I had cancer, I figured something was going on because one doctor came in and then they came out and then another doctor came in and then they came out. So it was like 3 or 4 that came in, but none of them all stayed together. So I knew something was kind of up.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor came in and told me that I had cancer. And of course my first response was, okay, well, when can I go back to work? Cause I was like, I have kids that are, you know, homeless or don't have families. And the only time they show, you know, they get love is for me, when can I go back to work? So I don't know if I was in denial at first or just so focused on, I finally got what I wanted and now I have this. But after the doctors left and everything, actually sat down with my mom and my husband, and we talked about it for a little bit, and then it was just me and my husband, and I told him, I was like, well, what if it was one of my students that got diagnosed? What if it was one of their family members? Like, how would I would have responded then? Like, I would want to support them and all of that. So from there, I decided to, like, just to share, like, what I was going through and the feelings and all that. So so from the very beginning, I just wanted to, it was more for my students in the beginning, but just to, you know, show them that I was okay and all of that and inspire them to keep doing what they're doing. So from the very beginning, and it was scary, like, I had those episodes of why me, which I think everyone has that got diagnosed with cancer.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
But yeah, but at the same time though, I taught little kids and I didn't want them to be scared. So I put on a front that I wasn't scared in front of all them and family members and all that. But of course I was, but I just decided to use it to just, I mean, at first, of course it was for my students, but for others. So like each chemo, to stay busy, I would make posters. It was to update my students that I was okay. And then it became bigger than that in my community and all that stuff. So
where are you at today? I know that, or at least if, you know, excuse me if I'm misquoting here, but you said you had 6 months of chemo. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, what was that whole situation like? You know, how did you, cause you sound like you've stayed like very positive and been like a very strong and upbeat person. Just, you know, from the short time speaking to you, how did you manage to get through that 6 months? What was that like? The anxiety and.
Yeah. So, so I did outpatient chemo.
Okay.
So it was, okay, so 1 week, the entire week. So Monday through Friday, I would have to go every single day and get chemo. Monday when I left, I actually went home with a chemo pump that I had chemo on 24/7. It actually went into a little fanny pack that I had to wear around. And I had to go back each day to get a different chemo, but each day I would come home with the chemo pack going. And then on Fridays, I would go back, they would unhook me, get my last chemo, and then I would go home. 24 hours after I finished chemo, I'd have to go to the hospital and get a new last shot to build up my white blood cell count, because, of course, chemo kills it. And then I had 2 weeks off. But during those 2 weeks, there was 2 days each week that I would have to go get blood work. So there was always a week where I just had to be like locked inside the house because my counts were low. If I went outside, I'd have to wear a mask. And it was always the last weekend before chemo that my counts were the highest. We'd always do something, whether we went to an aquarium that's about an hour away, we'd always try to do something, go to the movies or whatnot. But as far as like my emotional state going through it, like I kind of felt like locked in my house. I'm not one, I'm always going. And so being locked in the house is very depressing. Like I couldn't even make it. My husband would take me to the grocery store and there would be times where I could make it in the door and I'd get too weak and couldn't walk. And so either he'd throw me in the buggy, which is funny. I'd sit in the buggy so we could finish grocery shopping, or he would have to take me back home, and then him and my mom would have to finish grocery shopping later. So it was very, very upsetting. The fact that I was 23, I was physically active, and then I hit this 6 month span where I basically couldn't go anywhere from getting too weak, or when I did go somewhere, my counts were so low that I had to wear a mask. So that was kind of rough. I definitely did some fun things. Like I would have movie nights or movie days with my friends in my bed, which is funny. They would come and we'd watch movies and stuff like that. And a lot of family members would come over. And going to things were big deals. I remember my friends got married while I was going through chemo. My husband was actually supposed to be in the wedding, but they took him out because, of course, he was taking care of me. And I was so excited to make it to the wedding and all of that stuff. and being able to go to that, even though we were late because I had to finish chemo, like that was like the best thing ever, just getting out to go to their wedding.
I'm sure that was huge for you.
Yes. But yeah, just going places were just amazing to me.
Yeah. So that really helped you like get through. It was just being able to get out. I mean, yeah, that sounds terrible, being trapped in your house, especially if you're the kind of person that doesn't like to be trapped in the house.
You know, you love your home because you feel, you feel most comfortable in your home, but if you're stuck in there, it just feels like a prison.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How did your family react to all this when they found out? I mean, how did you even tell them?
Oh, my family?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm an only child, so my mom was actually there.
Okay.
My mom was there when the doctors told me. And my husband, which we were dating at the time, he was actually in the room as well. But I actually didn't tell my family. So whenever the doctors came in and told us and everything, my mom called everybody and I made her step outside. So actually my mom did all of that because I really couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be a really hard thing to tell people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think everybody kind of reacts differently anyway, and I don't think there's one right way to react or tell people things in general.
Yeah.
So what was the most surprising thing as far as how people reacted towards you or treated you, or was there anything surprising, or did you kind of get what you expected, or was it, you know, lots of love and support? And
well, I definitely had lots of love and support, but there were like a couple incidences that were very shocking.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to do the first chemo, let my hair start falling out, and then I would shave my head. I didn't want to shave my head immediately or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the first chemo, and then my hair started falling out, so we shaved my head. Well, one of my friends, she had cancer as well, and she said that she did like a scarf hat party, like a fun scarf hat party, so people can come and you can see people and they can bring you scarves and hats and you can just, you know, make a fun day out of it. So we decided to do that. I shaved my head, and then the next day is when I was seeing my family and friends for the first time because we were doing the scarf hat party, which was really fun and awesome. And then afterwards, a couple of my husband and his friends and a couple of family members, we went to the pool hall because after I get started chemo, I couldn't go to the pool hall much anymore. And we were there and I sat down and I took my hat off and of course I was bald. And, this gentleman said something to the aspect of, I can't believe your man let you go out the house with a hairdo like that.
Oh my gosh.
And of course I snapped back and I was like, it's called cancer. And he kept saying things like, well, they should lock you in a house and not let you come out like that. Like, saying things like that. And of course my family and friends got really upset, and it took probably like 10 guys to hold my husband back. So things like that were very, very hurtful. I can't believe that people would actually say that, but yeah, that was a shocking thing that happened.
Yeah, that really shocks me, actually. I can't believe somebody would react like that towards anybody. That's terrible. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, you get it from little kids, which I understand. They'd be like, you know, mommy, why is this lady bald? And you understand it because kids don't know any better.
Sure.
But for an adult to do that, it was just horrible. But other than that, I had a lot of support.
So. Yeah. As you should. Anybody going through a hard situation should be able to, you know, turn to friends and family. That's how it should be.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed is, like, people that I went to high school with that I, like, didn't know, per se, like, they just start, I can't say coming out of the woodworks, but, like, coming out of the woodworks and were like, hey, I went to high school with you, and like messaging me on Facebook and all this. I'm like, oh, hi. Like I didn't remember them, but like people would just come out of nowhere. Like, it was crazy.
How'd you feel about that?
It was cool. I mean, to some point, except for like when you go to like a grocery store and random people like start walking up to you and hugging you, you know, like, do you remember me from here? And you say yes because you feel bad, but then you like don't want to tell them that you don't recognize them.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, that would be really weird to deal with, I think. Yeah, wow. I don't know how I'd react to that. I don't know how you dealt with a lot of this stuff, honestly. You're insanely strong. Who were you before your diagnosis? Do you think you've changed a lot? Who were you before your diagnosis? Do you think you've changed a lot?
I think I definitely changed, but I think some of my personality has definitely stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
I was always a go-getter, very active, always wanting to help people and things like that. So some of that has stayed the same, but my perspective on life, of course, has changed.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So beforehand, to be honest, my only goal in life was, and I know this sounds bad, but, to be successful and to have a house and things like that. Like other than to be a teacher, like other things I never really thought about, like, I never really thought about the small stuff. I never took the time out to, you know, see the beauty in the sky, or, I wanted to do like fun, adventurous things, but I never took time to do the small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now I take time to do the small stuff, and I see that like other people are so important. And so, getting to know other people, getting to know other stories is a lot more important to me, than it was beforehand. I've always liked to help others, but I would help others by, you know, I helped at a soup kitchen a couple times and things like that. But now actually I can do it in a better way. You know, as far as like sharing my story and stuff like that. But, and I never would have thought I would have been like be a nurse ever in my life. I didn't like blood. I didn't like, throw up. Like, it was bad. And then the fact that I'm a nurse now is amazing to me. Like, pretty much no bodily fluids affect me anymore. And like the fact that somebody can code and I can jump in and start doing CPR. And of course I'm scared, but you just jump in and those instincts kick in. And I never thought I would be like that ever.
What was that journey like? What was that process like for you going from teacher to nurse?
It was very difficult. So I only had 3 core classes. And so getting in the program wasn't that hard, because I had a great GPA. But once I got into the program, like, all I knew was being a patient as, like, a cancer patient. But there's so other many aspects of nursing that you have to learn in nursing school. And I got so overwhelmed and struggled and, like, legit cried all the time because I thought I couldn't do it. But my third semester in nursing school, I applied for this program. It was called the DEN program, where instead of doing clinicals with a professor, you get to go with a nurse and do your clinicals one-on-one. Your professor grades your paper. And I got chosen to do that. And my nurse, she was amazing. Like, literally, I went to, like, scared to do anything, scared to touch a patient, to like, I would jump in and go help people start IVs or anything like that they would need while I was doing that program. And I think she was the one that made it great for me. And it wasn't for her, I don't actually know if I would have graduated, because it was just so difficult learning everything and getting so much information like thrown at you, but you can't. It's kind of hard to 3D it, like, without an actual person or a patient and things like that, and putting it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually put it all together for me.
So throughout this process, I mean, would you say that it sounds like you've surprised yourself, but what's the most surprising thing?
The most surprising thing is that, I don't know, that's a good question. I think the most surprising thing is how far I've come.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I got diagnosed with cancer, you know, I didn't think that 4 years from then, which it's been 4 years ago, that I would be working on an oncology floor, or writing a book about my cancer journey, having people like on social media, like contacting me when they're going through cancer and, wanted to ask me questions and things like that. And, having, of course, people like you doing podcasts, like wanting to know my story. Like, it's just surprising to me how far I've come.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about your book, actually? I mean, that's not something we've talked about at all. Let's dive into that.
So I'm writing a book. It's a course about my journey and through cancer and all of that. So whenever I was going through it, I kept a journal. The same girl that was a cancer survivor that told me about the hat scarf party, she gave me a journal and told me to write everything down because she was like, some of the medications you won't remember. So why don't you just go ahead and write everything down and then you can read it later and you can just see like what you were feeling and things like that. Well, right before I took the cancer job, I went to the journal and read it. And I was like, I didn't realize like some of the feelings that I had and some of the things that I felt like. I always thought I was okay being bald, mm-hmm. But I actually wrote a couple journal entries of the day that I shaved my head and, of course, the day that guy said what he said, and just seeing the, like, the emotions and feelings. And then I started my job, like, literally a week later and seeing some of those patients going through that, that I decided to start a book to share how my feelings were so that way it could help more people because I'm in the middle of Georgia. Like, I can only help the people in the middle of Georgia, but I figured if I write a book, it can be spread throughout because there's cancer patients everywhere that may need help. And so that's what the book is. It's a lot of it's coming from the journal. And a lot of it's, just coming from old Facebook posts that I posted, text messages between family and friends at that time. I have a ghostwriter that helps me with some parts, like she interviews my best friend and my husband and my family members and people that were there at the time just to get a full aspect of like what it was really like.
What did your relationship go through during this time? You said you're married now, but you guys were dating when you were diagnosed.
Okay. Yes. So, amazing story. We went to high school together and we ran into each other. We had only been dating a month and a half when I got diagnosed.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, after the diagnosis, they told us and my mom left because he was staying at the hospital. So my mom could go home and take care of the dogs and everything. And I told him, I was like, look, I was like, this is not what you signed up for. I mean, we've only been dating like a month. Like, I don't understand if you want to leave and all of that stuff. And he was like, no, I'm not leaving. And he's legit been by my side since that day. Although I did make him promise that he wouldn't propose to me until I got my hair back. So we've been married for 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he stuck by my side the entire time.
What do you think it was that kept him? I mean, he's and not to be, you know, negative or anything, but I mean, he could have just up and left. I mean, what do you think makes him different?
I think what makes him different is I've known him since high school, so we've been friends since high school, but mm-hmm. he's very loyal and caring. And whenever I gave him the ultimatum, like he had no question in his mind that he wanted to go. And of course he told me later, he was like, I'd already fell in love with you before the diagnosis, but of course I didn't tell you that. I think the fact that he had already loved me before the diagnosis and that he's just a lovable person. Like, he will help. He will give anybody the shirt off their back. Like, I remember one Christmas Eve, it was raining. We had my nephew, and somebody had broke down on the side of the road. And he got out and helped them push their car off the busy highway. While I drove her truck and made sure that they had a ride home and all that stuff. He just wants to help others. And I think that's his personality that just made him, I guess, attached to me and then stay once I got diagnosed.
Do you find that I don't know, has he shared any of his feelings with you throughout this process? Has he expressed any fear? I mean, what, you know, you guys must have gone through some pretty terrifying situations and times during all of this. Do you remember anything specific where you were both like terrified of, you know, the future or what could happen? Or were you pretty set on the fact that you were going to beat this and nothing was going to stop you?
There was a couple of times, because of where my mass was and we had to start chemo, so fast that, we didn't know if I was going to make it or beat it. I mean, we took the optimism that I was, and we were going to try so hard to make it. But there were a couple conversations, you know, that we had at the house where, he was just scared to death that I was going to die and that he was going to lose me. And it was the scariest time ever. I mean, we did have those, but of course we didn't tell our family. We just told each other because my mom would freak out. His mom would freak out. So we just kind of kept it to ourselves, about how scared we were as far as that. So.
When was the turning point where you realized that things were improving and you were going to make it? Do you remember what that was like?
I think the turning point was for me. His was actually a different turning point. His was the day that they told us that I was in remission. She sat down and she was like, you know, your scans came back, you're in remission, but where your cancer was and all of that, you'll never be considered cancer-free, just in remission. And he was like, that's when he knew, you know, I was going to be fine and all that stuff. But to me, it didn't register because all I heard was, I'll never be considered cancer-free. So yeah. I didn't understand, like, how I could be in remission and, you know, live a pretty much normal life, but yet I'm still never considered cancer-free. So we came out of that meeting, and, of course, I still had to finish my last chemo. And he went to go get us lunch, and I was talking to some of the nurses about it. And we talked probably, I still hadn't finished the chemo, so it was probably 3 or 4 days every day when he went to go get lunch when he wasn't around, about the difference and what it means and all that stuff. So probably a week later, as I sat, you know, by myself and thought about it, that's when I really knew.
Anyway,
that I was going to make it and I was going to be fine.
How did that feel? Was that just a gigantic sigh of relief?
It was. It was a gigantic sigh of relief. And I just, I felt so much stress come off of me. But then at the same time, though, like, your cancer can always come back. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I do always have those, you know, those feelings, well, my cancer can always come back. So I do kind of worry about that, but not as much as I used to. But yeah, I do always worry about that.
Is that a memory that sticks out to you more than any other? Or is there another memory that kind of sticks out in your head throughout this?
That's one of the memories. I think another, I had a really good friend whose child was battling cancer at the same time. And she was doing clinical trials because chemo after chemo after chemo failed with her. And actually it was last year, No, it was 2 years ago because it was right before my wedding. She passed away. And the guilt I had, I had a lot of guilt because I was really upset of, you know, I was adult. I can't say I lived a full life, but I was adult and I survived and why this little girl didn't. So, of course, I went back to those feelings of, you know, why did I survive and the little girl didn't, like that was a child and all that stuff. So that's probably another memory that sticks out for me of going back to you know, the why and the guilt and all of that.
Do you think you still have a little bit of survivor's guilt? Because you're a nurse now, and I'm not sure. Are you an oncology nurse? I'm sorry. I don't know if you mentioned that at all.
Yeah, I work on an oncology floor, but I'm not oncology certified yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you do see a lot of people go in there, you know, that are battling cancer or, you know, other, you know, and in various stages. Do you still feel a lot of that? Because that must be a really unique perspective. And I don't know how common that must be to be a nurse who also survived cancer.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's whenever you have a patient who has, you can tell that has like a good outcome for the most part. It's really cool to be like, you know, I've been there. I've been in the bed before. Like I completely understand. I had a patient here recently who had to get, it's called an NG tube, which is a tube that goes down the nose into the stomach to suck up like all the bad stuff. So like if they have a small bowel obstruction or things like that, they do these NG tubes. And this patient, they had tried multiple times, I guess in the ER or whatnot, to do this NG tube, and she was just so scared. And I actually had another nurse actually help me with the tubes, and I coached her through it, you know, told her everything was going to be okay, you're going to be fine, and coached her through that. And after, because I've had an NG tube before, granted, I don't remember them putting it in, but I've had an NG tube before. And afterwards, she was explaining to me, like, having someone that has been there before, like, was just the amazing feeling. So that is great. Like, that side of it is fantastic to be able to hold her hand and then know that someone that I've been there before. Mm-hmm. But it's your patients who know, like, you know, it's not going to be a good outcome. Like the doctors have tried everything that they could do. That's kind of hard. Sometimes I don't even mention I'm a cancer survivor to them.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, I don't want to give them false hope or anything like that. And then if they know, like sometimes of course the survivor guilt comes back. I remember the first time that I had to call a family member and let them know that, their family had passed away. We have a palliative unit, so we're the only part of the hospital that has a palliative unit. So whenever it comes to care comfort, whether it's cancer or anything else, they come to our floor on that side of the unit, and we take care of them. But the first time I had to call a family member and let them know that their family didn't pass, like, I was so scared, like, I was nervous, like, I was crying on the other end. But, of course, you can't tell them that because you have to stay professional.
Yeah.
I definitely do still have the survivor's guilt, and it comes anytime like a patient has a bad outcome. Like it hadn't really gotten better at all. So
yeah, how do you deal with that? How do you overcome that?
I think I talked to the other nurses, and because they don't have survivor's guilt, but of course they know what it's like to like lose the patients.
Mm-hmm.
So, the nurses on my floor are really great. We talk through a lot of them. And then just talking to them, and I kind of keep, a journal of like, not of course the patients because of HIPAA violations and things like that, but keep a journal of like how I was feeling when this patient, you know, passed away and things that, I can may say to myself to make it better for the next time or things like that. So.
I completely lost my train of thought there. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I guess I'm interested in, you know, I don't know. You have such a unique perspective, being a nurse and also having gone through the same thing. And I know I mentioned that just a few minutes ago, but it's really captivating to me how, you know, you don't, I mean, you must get attached in some way, or you must feel some kind of kinship with your patients, or I guess it's the surprising thing is how incredibly professional you're able to be. I guess I have trouble understanding that, because I myself, I think I would be attached to everybody. And I think I would be, you know, very, I think it would, I would take it very personally, and I think it would be really hard for me to keep professional. How do you separate those two?
Well, on my floor, I don't get the same patients back. Sometimes, like, of course, they come there for surgeries. They remove the cancer, and then, of course, hopefully we don't see them again.
Okay.
So that's one of the ways that it makes it easier, even though, like, it's sad because I'm not going to see them again. But, of course, eventually I want to work in an infusion center where I give chemo, so I will see the same patients. And we do see some of the same patients. And sometimes, like, I mean, I do get personal with them, and I do feel the connection, like, even if they're not my patient, whenever I have time, I'll go in the room and go see them, you know, just to see how they're doing and things like that. But I do, you know, I do get connected to a lot of them, and I feel like each one of them just helps me, like, build my story. And there's one in particular that she'd been in and out for a few months or two. I had her a couple times, and we had talked about it. And, of course, I told her I was writing a book and all that. And she was like, well, I'm so excited to read it. She's like, I know you can't put me in it, but if you could, like, slide some of the stuff that I say, go ahead and put that in there, because I'd love to be in it. So I do tell them some of them about the book, just to try to make them feel better, because I try to tell them, you know, I did have those feelings as well. I was like, I can't remember exactly all of them, because you are on some medications where you don't remember, but I'm going through, you know, so I'm going through my journal now and things like that. And so, yeah, I do build a connection with them a lot, but I guess the professional nurse also kicks in as well. So
yeah, I guess it kind of has to, and you probably learn to deal with that.
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
No, I was just saying, I'd imagine that you'd have to. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I actually worked in an oncology unit. I'm not oncology, a cardiac unit, before I came into oncology, because I couldn't get a job in oncology beforehand. And I know y'all interviewed a cardiac nurse too. And I think the cardiac actually was able to build my nursing professionalism and how, like, you know, a nurse should act, because it was kind of hard to connect with cardiac because I've never had cardiac. So, you know, it was just nurse all the time. You know, you did your nursing skills. I mean, of course, I cared for my patients. But I think having that and then going to the oncology helped me build my nursing professionalism before going to oncology.
Well, that makes sense. Has it been therapeutic, or, you know, helping people that have gone through the same thing, or is it constantly, like, reopening your, you know, your wounds and your trauma?
I think it's more therapeutic for me. Mm-hmm. Because the more and more I talk about it and more I help people, like, it makes me feel that I had cancer for a reason. And it's okay that I had cancer. And it's okay that I'm growing and learning from it. Not everybody feels that way, which I completely understand. Some people just want to put that chapter behind them and not even talk about it ever, which is okay. But it's definitely therapeutic for me.
And I'm, you know, I don't want to back up too much. I know we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but What was the moment like that you decided to become a nurse and go into your specific field? I know you kind of touched on it, but if you can be like a little bit more specific, like was there like a certain moment, like a flash of lightning, or was it kind of, you know, like a gradual pull towards nursing?
It was about a probably 2 weeks to a month process that it finally hit me.
Okay.
I knew that there was something missing, even though I loved teaching when I went back. Like, I either wanted to be a spokesperson for cancer, but I didn't know how to do that. Like, I'd spoke at one thing and then could never get, scheduled to do other things. So I kind of epically failed at that. So I went for a follow-up appointment one day, and there was this elderly man, and he was in a wheelchair, and his wife was parking the car. Somebody was parking the car, and I was like, I'll take you up. I know where the chemo room is. It's fine. So they went and parked the car, and of course, I took him on the elevator and took him back to the chemo room and found a chemo chair for him and everything like that. And he... And the next day, of course, I think there was two follow-ups for some reason of why I had to come back the next day. But I came back the next day, and one of my nurses was like, he was looking for you. He kept saying that he was looking for the nurse that pushed him up in the wheelchair. And we had to tell him that you weren't a nurse. And I was like, oh, I feel bad now. I should have told him that. I just assumed that he knew. And I went into my actual oncologist's office, and we were talking about it and joking because she's really sweet. And she's like, you know what? You would make a great nurse. And I was like, I don't know if I'm smart enough to be a nurse. And she's like, no, you would be a great nurse. And I was like, She's like, yeah, you would love being a nurse and work with cancer patients. So I was like, I don't know. I don't do blood or throw up or anything like that. She's like, I'm just saying. I was like, okay. So I went home, and of course, just thinking about what she said and all that stuff, and talked to my husband about it for like a week or two. And then finally I was like, no, I could do that. Being a nurse would be amazing, because then I could work with cancer patients and I know what it's like because I've been there. Like, it just clicked.
Yeah.
And so that's when we decided for me to go to nursing school and come an oncology nurse.
How quick was that process? Did you just like sign up for school and start, or...
So I applied for school, didn't get into a couple schools, and got into a local school that was doing their first RN program. So I finished teaching in May, and I had three core classes that I had to take. So like literally the last week of school, somebody had to give the first day, had to give my final, because I went and started one of my classes. And then I came back and finished out with my students and started my core classes that summer. And then that fall, I did some other classes to prep for nursing school if I got in January, which I did. I found out 3 weeks before the program started that I did get in. I got in and I started in that January. And from that January, it took a year and a half. So I started, it was January 2017, and I graduated in May 2018.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, because I had a bachelor's degree in teaching, some of the core classes I had already, so it didn't take that long.
Okay. And how quickly did you start working?
Well, I told you about that DIN program that mm-hmm. I did.
Yeah.
So they had an extern program where you actually get hired on and you get paid. Like, you follow a nurse around, you can learn nursing skills. You get paid to do that. So I actually started on the same floor with a nurse that I was doing the DIN program with. So I externed for a year while I was still in nursing school. When I graduated nursing school in May, I was scheduled to take the boards in June.
Okay.
I took them, and I failed the first time. And I was so devastated. I was like, I let my family down, like, so devastated. And I was like, what do I do? I left a career and now I failed this test, and cried to my professors, and they're like, it's okay, just take it again. And I was so devastated. And I re-registered and I took it. It was like 48 days later, because you have to wait 45 days. So I took it like 48 days later. The second time I only had like 82 questions, passed with flying colors, got my RN, and then I accepted a job on the floor where I was doing my externship. So from graduation, I graduated in May, and once I took the boards and passed, I started in August as an actual nurse, but on the floor that I was externing. So it was an easy transition.
So I know this is kind of off topic of what we've been talking about here, but or at least veering off of nursing a little bit. So I don't mean to switch up topics on you so quickly, but do you find that, I mean, it's obviously different being young versus, you know, being an older person and having cancer at any stage. But have you spoken with anybody that's older and, or anybody younger even, and their perspective? How does that differ from yours? And do you think that you look at life differently because you are so young versus somebody who, I don't know, say is in their 50s, 60s, 70s and has cancer or ends up being diagnosed?
I've actually talked to multiple people and there's different opinions. There is one young girl. She actually just graduated high school a couple weeks ago. She actually had cancer the same time I did. She was, I think, a freshman in high school when it happened, or in eighth grade, I'm not sure. And because I was so open about my journey, and then I became an oncology nurse, that she is now going to school to become an oncology nurse, because she wants to help other cancer patients too. So of course she's in the same line that I am. But there's other cancer patients that I've talked to that, they don't like to talk about their cancer period. They like, it's one chapter in their life that they're ashamed of and they just don't want to talk about. And I kind of find they were kind of in their 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And then there is some of the older generations that I've talked to who, there's one that actually has a terminal diagnosis, but he just wants to extend his life as long as possible. Just hang out with his family as long as possible. But he is like, I accept the fact that eventually my cancer is going to kill me. But I'm just going to live life to the fullest. And he is like, if somebody asks me about my cancer, I'll tell them. He is like, but I don't mention it. And I just try to extend my life, and then eventually it will kill me, but I'm going to live the best life I can until it does. So, I mean, you get all different perspectives, and I don't know if it's because of the age or just different people's personality.
Did you have, this is going to sound very morbid, so I apologize, I don't mean it that way at all.
But okay.
Did you have, you know, I don't want to say a plan, but did you have like a scenario for if things didn't turn out well, or, you know, especially with your husband? I guess he wasn't your husband yet, but did you guys talk about that, and how hard was that conversation, and how did that go?
We did talk about it. We only talked about it a couple of times or two, because he was like, no, he was like, I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But you know, I did tell him, you know, if anything happens to me, of course, you know, I don't want you to like live in sorrow forever. You know, I still want you to like live your life. And if that means you're going to date again and all that stuff, that's okay. And I did joke around with him. I was like, you at least have to wait a year. So, but I never really talked about it with my mom, mm-hmm. Because my mom had lost 3 kids before me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, all of them were to miscarriages, and it was just before me. So,
still so very the difficult fact that
she
to,
lost,
yeah.
Yeah. She still won't even mention it to me. Like, no. She'll still never talk about, like, before my dad died. He was the one that told me about it. And she has a tattoo that has, like, a blue rose and two pink roses. And, of course, she told me what they meant whenever she went to go get the tattoo. But she would never talk about it. My dad would tell me about it. And so that's how I knew. But of course I never told her that I had any of those feelings because of that, because she'd already lost three kids and I was her miracle baby as it is. So
what was your scenario? You know, how did you internalize that?
I think I just kind of, I had a friend who died in high school that had cancer. And so I kind of just thought to myself, you know, well, I'm not scared. I mean, I don't know, like, your beliefs, but I believe in God and all of that. And I'm Christian. And so I kind of, and my belief, well, if, you know, I'm going to, if I die, I'm going to, you know, go to heaven and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so it was okay. Of course I was going to fight everything to not pass away early, but if I did, it was going to be okay. It was scary, but I knew it was going to be okay because in my belief, I was going to go see my dad again and all of that.
That's incredibly brave. I'm sure people tell you this all the time, but that, you know, you're an incredibly brave person. And I think a lot of us I think a lot of us couldn't deal with what you've gone through, especially at such a young age.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of, sometimes, I know there's a quote that says this, but like, sometimes you don't know that you're brave until it's the only choice that you have.
That's a great quote.
And I felt like it was the only choice that I had, yeah.
I've never heard that before, but that's a really profound way to look at things. Yeah. So, before we wrap up here, I know I've got you... I've had you for almost an hour now, so I don't want to take up too much of your time, but what is your ultimate goal with your book? You know, is it to help people? Is it to, you know, have a cathartic release? Is it to, I know, obviously, to tell your story, but what do you want to accomplish?
Of course I want to help people. But I think the goal of my book is to let people know that, you know, it's okay to have like any feelings or whatever, and it's okay not to share them, or I chose to share them. But I just want them to know that it's okay, because you can have a million feelings. And also, the caregivers are very important, and sometimes the cancer patients, like, they don't mention things to their caregivers. They don't tell them how they're feeling. And so my goal, even to help the caregivers for my book, is just to let them know, like, to kind of get them a feel of, you know, that what a cancer patient can go through, and things to never say to a cancer patient. I know that sounds crazy, but there are some things never to say to a cancer patient. And that's another thing but it's just awareness that I want to bring with the book.
Do you want to, while we have you on here, do you want to share some of those things maybe people aren't aware of, and maybe, you know, that would be really helpful to people to know what not to say?
Yeah. So some of the things, for example, whenever you're a woman, people automatically assume, if you say, oh, I have cancer, people assume, oh, you have breast cancer? Did they remove your breast? Number one, I didn't have breast cancer. I know a lot of women have breast cancer, but don't all automatically assume that. Number two is, it's okay to, ask things, but just don't come up and be like, oh, so you must have cancer because you're bald. Not all the time. Or I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and people say like it's an easy cancer, and so people all the time are saying, oh, well, that's the best type of cancer to have.
Oh, wow.
No, any type of cancer is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that. And the one that I get a lot now, that I kind of understand where people are coming from, but then I kind of don't. Like people ask me, oh, well, why'd you become a nurse? And I was like, oh, because I had cancer. And the first thing they say, oh, you don't look like you had cancer. So what am I supposed to look like?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I never say that, but like, I'm like, oh, thank you. But like, what am I supposed to look like? So those are some things that just, that I get a lot. And I know other cancer patients get a lot as well. And those are just, I mean, a few of them. I know there's a lot more, but those are just a few of them that it can come off the top of my head.
Is there anything you'd like to say to, you know, the listeners about who you are now, what you've learned and how you've grown? And I don't know, you know, I know you talked a little bit about not giving false hope, but for anybody out there, you know, going through a similar situation, is there anything you'd like to tell them, that kind of helped you or that you think would help?
Yeah, so I definitely know that going through cancer is scary, and it's okay to be scared. But always find joy in the small stuff. Like for me, I was going to my friend's wedding. It may be, you know, that you can cook dinner for your family, like without any help. Like try to do the small things and then the bigger things will come. I always tell, especially the women, because you don't recognize yourself, like you lose your hair, your body looks completely different. If you, like, for breast cancer patients, sometimes they lose their breasts and they look completely different. I always say to find the smallest thing that's beautiful, whether it's a flower or something that's a part of your life, and the next day find something else, and the next day and then try to find something, a small thing that's beautiful about you, and then eventually you'll see, like, the beauty in all of it.
I mean, that's incredible. I'm not sure we could end it on a better note, honestly. So thank you so much for your time, Crystal, and sharing your story. I know I've already said this a million times, but you're an incredibly brave person. And not just for, you know, what you've gone through, but for sharing your story. That's not easy to do, and it's not something everybody does. And I think that people like you, maybe you do realize it or maybe you don't, but just telling your story helps a lot. It helps countless amounts of people. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you.
And that concludes another episode of Far Betterment. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you to all my subscribers. And thank you to everybody who's rated the podcast so far. If you haven't subscribed, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, including where you're listening to podcasts right now. And please, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us tremendously. I can't tell you how much it helps us. If you want to give us anything less than 5 stars, please don't. There's really no reason.